far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we get to travel across the universe with the finest women in the galaxy in our review of Sol Bianca.
Jeez, the Total Drama Island nude stuff came up again. I see on Discord.
Well,
he posted some pixelated version of some nude cartoon image. The Ez Kid.
Yeah. Well, it was in response to he brought up a Twitter thread about that.
I didn't click on the thread. I just saw the thumbnail in the channel.
Well,
I just clicked on
not
the
only did I click on the thread, but I left a reply, an honest reply.
Oh, okay.
Let me see if I can find what I said here. I think I did.
Biku isn't going to be pleased with us using the Twitter to respond to random people. You remember when he tried to drop his contract and prevent us from doing this for keeping us on Tune Radio and all that?
Oh, my gosh.
Him and death.
Well, that's all in the past.
Yeah. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
Because Tune Radio doesn't exist and Viku is not in the chat anymore.
Yeah. So, it's Rise and Fall Nick was like, I've seen an uncensored version of this because everyone's claiming this is fake. And I'm not lying about this. I wouldn't forget something like this because it shocked the hell out of me. My response was, men never forget seeing nude titties. That is an enabled trait we are all blessed with.
So you'll always remember the first time you saw Sol Bianca episode 2 where they take off their clothes.
Well, that wasn't the first time I saw nude breast, but okay. I mean, I still haven't. I've never forget that. So, like I said, it's a trait. So nah, men don't forget things like that. So I imagine it's the same for women. And like, you know, they're gonna always remember their first like penis or something.
Uh-huh.
That's just how we're wired. Now, depending on what...
It's more so for men.
Well, I mean, I think it's more so for men. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, for women, it depends on the context of what the penis was doing.
Maybe.
Yeah, that could either be a good thing or bad thing. So, depending
I remember, like, my next-door neighbor when I was a kid said she's, like, seen her dad naked or whatever, like, when he's taking a shower or something. So, I mean, a lot of people will have their first memory be something like that, which is not going to be something they want to remember all that vividly.
Yeah. No, I don't want to devolve into, like, the first time I saw nude breasts. So, but it involved, I was 13.
Okay.
And I'll just leave it at that. Nothing happened, but it was... screw it. I might as well just edit this for closing remarks or something. No, it was basically I didn't knock on a shower door. If I ever see her, I'm just thinking like, yeah, I saw you naked when I was 13. That's the only way I ever know.
Okay.
I might have to just censor this out, so, because...
This is too X-rated for our podcast.
Well, I think I've only told, like, a couple of people about that experience in my lifetime, so... I'll just leave it at that. So you're like one of the handful of people, like under the handful of people that know about this.
Okay.
So we'll just leave it at that.
Me, you, your
possibly. Well, there's been maybe one or two other people. I know I told my ex that once. Anyways, anyways. So welcome to the Enemy of Yesteryear podcast. I am your host, Dustin. With me is my co-host, John.
Yes.
And we're not talking about women's boobs, except if they're in anime. And we'll leave it at that.
Or if they're in the Bumblebee movie, which I somehow doubt because it's PG-13.
In the what movie?
The Bumblebee movie.
No, there wasn't anything in that movie.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, no. I'll definitely talk about that for closing remarks. No, we're not going down the rabbit hole of my life with breasts growing up and my adolescence. We're here to talk about actually an anime I've been wanting to talk about on this podcast since we started, or since I've been wanting to do podcasting, and now it's the time to do it, and that is the Soul Bianca OVAs, and not just the Legacy OVA series, because we may cover that one day, but the original ones from 1990 and 91 that are personally my favorite, like, is one of my favorite animes. Like, has been since I saw it when I borrowed my friend's recorded copies back in high school. So it's been like my favorite for, it must have been like 2002. So like maybe 16 years. So that sounds about right.
So 2001, was that when it aired on,
Stars? Yeah. Okay. So I have a history with this on how I've been, like, why I'm a fan of Soul Bianca. So I came across this in high school my sophomore year when, some friends of mine, one of them lent me his VHS tapings from the Stars Network when I guess he had satellite at some point, and they recorded an anime or whatever because that's what we did back then. And so then we borrow anime for each other and let us, you know, see it on a weekend or whatever. I'm actually going to go ahead and pull up that schedule. So Soul Bianca.
You have the Stars schedule from when it aired?
Yeah, because it's on ANN.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So do you know, like, what day it was and everything?
I don't know the day, but I can tell you the year. It seems like the earliest I can see it, and I'll have, like, links for this in the show notes, is, like, November of 2000 is when it started airing. And it was definitely the dub version. Because I first saw this, and I actually enjoyed it. I think the next thing on that tape was the anime Tekken movie, and I think I saw 5 minutes of it and cut it off because it almost made me sick. And yet I own two copies of that for some reason, really, so bad. We're going to have to review it one day. I saw this beautiful anime called Soul Bianca, and then I was like, oh, Tekken, this shouldn't look too bad. And it looked god awful in just the first 5 minutes. And I have just refused to see it since I saw, like, those 5 minutes. But then I wind up owning a DVD of it years ago, so then it's like, well, I'll just keep it around in case we ever review it, so.
I feel like you streamed it at one point, but I didn't.
No, I've never streamed it. I have never seen it since that recording, yeah.
Maybe that was something else.
I think
fighting anime at one point, you know.
Yeah, okay, so I think actually the Tekken recording came off something else, because I think maybe on the same tape. Maybe it was all on the same tape, but I remember, like, specifically on the tape I saw. The stuff I borrowed from my friend in high school was, like, the Grappler Baki OVA, which that was freaking amazing. And then it was Soul Bianca, and then it was Tekken. And I don't know if they came on the same tape or two different tapes. But I remember I borrowed a bunch of Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040 episodes, and that's how I saw, like, the last part of the series before I ever saw the first half of it. Which is a weird order, but I couldn't care less, so I just, yeah, I borrowed stuff from friends, and so, like, they were cool with it. Nothing happened to their tapes, so they were fine. But Soul Bianca, since I've seen it, has always stuck with me. I think about a year or so later, right before the VHS market crashed, I found a copy of Soul Bianca on VHS at a video store place they used to call Coconuts. Then the Coconuts changed to what's called an FYE and then eventually shut down, became a mattress factory. Or it's become different businesses in that spot in Cary, North Carolina since then. And I remember it was the big giant clamshell cases that ADV used to put out, like the larger set ones, not the paper ones. And it was like $30 and I was like, yes, I want this. And I didn't read, I think I didn't read it very well because I thought I was getting the dub version. And then it turns out I got the subtitle version and I was like, what the, ever since I saw the sub version for years and years, I thought, I was like, I know I heard this dub. I know what I saw dub, but I can never find a dub version either online. No one's ever ripped it. None of that stuff.
I was searching, like, I could barely even find any references to the existence of a dub version, but there was, like, some Reddit comment from earlier this year where somebody claimed they've seen it on a Sci-Fi channel, but I think they probably saw it on Stars, and it's just so long ago that they, you know, got it mixed up because people think of more of, like, Sci-Fi channel as airing anime in the 90s and early 2000s. Stars.
Right, yeah, I mean, I can understand that if they saw it in the 90s, that would have made sense, but, like, specifically according to what I see on ANN, It was Starz Encore, their action channel that aired anime, and it was based on these dates I'm seeing right in front of me. It's from 2000, and they would have to be in the dub because a lot of the stuff they showed dubbed that I borrowed from my friend's tape were all dubbed episodes. They wouldn't show anything subtitled. I mean, it was the same thing as Sci-Fi Channel airing anime, which none of it was subbed.
They said something to the effect of like, shortly after I saw this, I saw Cowboy Bebop on Adult Swim or something like that during one of the early runs.
Yeah.
So they probably saw it in 2001, 2002,
I think,
somewhere like that.
I mean, like, I'm pretty sure Soul Bianca probably was airing in 2001 also, so that would coincide when, Bebop was on TV. I wouldn't doubt it, but I think the first airings, I mean, based on what I'm seeing of Soul Bianca, was, late 2000. But I'll get back to talking about my Soul Bianca obsession and collection and fascination, and why I just want to collect anything of Soul Bianca, because it's an anime that nobody really brings up, nobody really talks about, and it's actually really good. It's not like a bad anime. It's a really good anime. It's a solid story. Sometime later, I wind up getting a hold. Actually, so I got, yeah, I pretty much own all of Soul Bianca on. You know, video format in some form or fashion. I got the second OVA for free from a guy on Twitter called New Type Ryan. He was posting up videos of, like, I guess him doing stuff or working or whatever, and he had a stack of, like, anime VHS tapes, and one of those was Soul Bianca 2. And as a comment, I responded, I was like, hey, man, like, how much would you sell Soul Bianca 2 for me? And he goes, oh, you could just have it. So he wound up just shipping it to me for free. And I think I might have covered for shipping for him or whatever. But, yeah, so that's how I got Soul Bianca 2. And then I think maybe around that time I got the Laserdisc. I found the Laserdisc of it on eBay for, like, $20 or something. And then included with the Laserdisc copy I got, so the guy I bought it from threw in the free copy of the first DVD of the Legacy set. And so, like, with the Legacy DVDs, I have spent probably less than $10 on all of those combined. On Legacy, like, I will say, like, I saw it fan subbed or whatever online before I ever decided to buy it. And I was not, I look back and I just wasn't impressed with it. But for some reason, like, I think I found them cheap and I was like, it's like $2 a DVD or something at, like, a bookstore. Whatever, I'll take it. And then, you know, now I own, like, all three of them. And even though, like, I wasn't really impressed with it, but at least I own them all. So there's that. And that Pioneer put those out, I believe. Yeah, Pioneer put out the Legacy OVA. And that Legacy series is, like, from the early 2000s also. It's like the Soul Bianca revival or whatever. So how I got a hold of the dub that I finally found my answer 2 years ago, and it kind of bring this full circle. Last year at AWA, I talked to Daryl Surratt about if he knew anything about the Soul Bianca dub, and he didn't, but he said the person to go talk to about that was Mike Toole. Then I was like, okay, well, then I obviously, what I do best is I just put that off and forgot about it. And then on Twitter, when there was this whole discussion about the Evangelion being redubbed and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to... getting in a Twitter convo or thread or whatever with Mike Toole about stuff. And then I decided to PM message him. I was like, hey, man, I need to ask you something. I'm hoping you can hook me up with this. And I was like, do you have a copy of the Soul Bianca dub? Daryl Surratt told me to get in touch with you over a year ago, and I'm now doing it. Do you know anything about that? And I was like, I can't find it online. Every time I've looked through the dub, I can never find it. And Mike goes, yeah, he's like, I don't know if I have it, but he checks eBay. And then on eBay, somebody had, like, these giant ADV collection, like, sets, like, you know, like a set of 8 tapes for, like, $20, $15 or something. And on there, in this one set, was the Soul Bianca English dub. And I was like, holy crap, I finally found it. And let me see that. Yeah, I actually put it back on my shelf. But so, it's the paper, it's not the clamshell dub, it's the paper, it's like the regular VHS cover. And I think I might have got, like, they must have done a second printing, because the date on that tape was like from 97. And that probably was the last time that dub came out, or anything Soul Bianca related came out, around that year. And yeah, I mean, at least for that original OVA. And I finally saw it, and I was kind of like, you know, finally after like, you know, 16 years, 15 years, I finally get a hold of the thing I've been wanting to try to find for so long. And I guess I don't remember like everything about the dub, because I only saw it once, like, you know, when I bought for my friend's copy I borrowed in high school. But it was still really good to hear that dub. And so then, of course, what I did is I'll put this in show notes, where I went ahead and uploaded the dub on YouTube so other people can check it out. So it's out there. It's finally out there online, until somebody from YouTube puts a copy strike, right strike on it, or I've so far I've had three like copyright claims on it, but like it's nothing for it to be taken down.
It can get hit three times and not be taken down.
Yeah. So let me go ahead and pull up exactly. Well, there's some company, I think an Italian company that like is claiming rights on it. And I sent them an email to the company, like a message. And I was like, well, why am I getting, you know, cause I had to look them up. And I was like, okay, why am I getting copyright strikes on something that, first of all, the original license of it in Japan is expired, and I don't even know if anybody has the rights to it. The last time it was ever put out in America was back in 97. We never got a DVD release of it. The only DVD releases of it came out in Europe and the UK as a collection for 1 and 2, and also in Japan. And that's been 18 years since that's been. And, you know, and so, like, and no one's ever been able to bother to put it out. There's been no remasters of it or anything like that. So, like, who really has the rights to this? Because I remember I sent a message to AIC about it, because I was curious, like, months ago, and I haven't heard back from them. So that ought to tell you something about Soul Bianca, at least this original OVA. I think if I – my thing was I was holding out hopes that, like, Discotheque would get a hold of it. But, like, if nobody really has the rights to it – I don't even know if the original creators of it, have the rights to it in some form or fashion, then there's probably, you know, no chance of it, coming out in the States unless that all gets, you know, handled. And who knows if ADV still has the rights to their dub. So yeah.
I figure AIC probably still has the rights to it since they made it. They probably have perpetual rights, but it's definitely unlicensed in the US. I mean, ADV hasn't done anything with it in decades. And they would have not bothered to renew it when they became Section 23 and Sentai and all those other companies made in Japan.
Yeah, you figure, like, they would, I mean, they've been rescuing a bunch of, they've been doing rescues and then also releasing stuff here in America that hasn't been released. Like, you know, they're putting out Zabungle and Edeon on Blu-ray. So they're getting hold of titles that, like, you know, we never thought we'd see in America. And you figure they might want to go back for their old titles like Soul Bianca and put that out like in a Blu-ray set and like make it HD and add that original dub. So speaking of the dub, it only exists on the first OVA. They never did a dub for the second one. I don't know if it was due to poor sales here in America or whatever, but they just never bothered to do it. And in terms of what people were able to find online until I was able to put out the English dub on YouTube, it was always a subtitle version. Yeah, the subtitle version you can find online was it's the version from ADV that's got the black bars with white text over it that covers like that, like most of the bottom of the screen that just doesn't look that good. And,
yes.
And you figured ADV would take some hints on from other companies that were subtitling anime around this time that were out a little bit longer than them, like, I don't know, Anime Ego, or US Renditions, or Right Stuff, or CPM. You figure they take a hint, but no, they had to do it that way. And then eventually they wised up and did subtitle versions without that nasty black bar at the bottom. So, there you go.
Yeah, the bar is pretty annoying when you're watching this. So I guess that's just how they thought that you're supposed to do subtitles, because that's kind of like the default. If you see like you know, at the airport or hospital or something, you know, with closed captions on, it'll be like a black bar on the background.
And maybe that was the software they used, and you know, Matt Greenfield was like, ah, it's perfect the way it is. We're not going to change it. And then I guess some, and then when you get enough complaints, like, oh, maybe we should probably alter it a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that was like they weren't rich enough to have better subtitling software or hardware at the time to do it. So, because a lot of the subtitling stuff in the early days was off like Amigas and like maybe even Apple computers. That was like very bare bones stuff. Yeah. So that's kind of like the pioneering of like subtitling and fan subbing, and then a later fan subber, you know, people that did fan subs for stuff. In case of AMA Ego, they like, oh, let's make it into a legit business. So then they were just able to just use their scripts and then subtitle it with the software that they had and just keep it that way because it's always worked. So, like, you know, if it ain't work, I mean, if it ain't broken, don't bother to fix it. Anyway, so that's kind of my history on Soul Bianca there. I've actually got a couple of animation cells from the OVA that I had someone hook me up with from Amazon Japan about a year ago or so, maybe 2 years ago. Those are sitting above me on my on top of my shelf, and I don't think I've ever bought frames for them, but they're sitting above me. So yeah, like anything I can get a hold of Soul Bianca, I will. I'm probably one of these few people out there that really enjoy this OVA. And on this podcast, I think I said this earlier, for years I've been wanting to talk about this, and then I've always like, oh, you know, and then now we're finally doing it after you've seen it, and after I put up like my whole digitized version of the dub on my spleen, so then other people can see it. So that's
you
all.
You talked about it previously on that first Anime Loves Valentine's Day special years ago.
Yeah.
But it was only like part of the episode because we also had on somebody to talk about.
Jeff Tibbetts from. Jeff Tibbetts was on there. We had him on as a guest.
My Son of Goku, I think that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, he talked about Mason of Goku on there. That was like year one for us, so that's been about 6 years since we did that.
Okay, wow.
Episode five or six or whatever, yeah.
I hadn't seen My Son Eikoku or Soul Bianca at that time, and I still have not seen My Son Eikoku. But I've seen Soul Bianca at least.
Yeah, and Soul Bianca is a quick watch too. I mean, like, it's only just those original two OVAs. I mean, like, I'm kind of like diehard in terms of Soul Bianca fandom, if you want to call it that. I'm probably the only representative of that. It's how I feel. On, you know, those old OVAs are great, and then the new legacy ones are garbage. Kind of like Bubblegum Crisis fans will argue that the original OVAs are great. The Tokyo 2040 TV series is garbage. I don't feel that way about Tokyo 2040 because that was how I got into Bubblegum Crisis in the first place. And, you know, I saw it when I was 16, so I thought it was actually pretty cool, and I probably need to go back and rewatch that again, and we can probably do a review of it. Because we talked about the Bubblegum Crisis OVA, I think, like, almost, like maybe 7-8 years ago from the Cool Kids Club days. So,
yeah.
It's been a while.
We never did Crash.
I did Crash on another podcast, used to be One Pixel Jump. Those episodes are still out there on archive.org. So if we ever do a Crash review, I will definitely put up, there were two brothers that did it. One was Joe and I forgot the other one. And I don't know where they are, but like those episodes are still on archive.org and I was a guest on, two out of three of those episodes for Crash to talk about it. And they were really fun. So, like, if we ever do Crash, I'll definitely post up those episodes on our show notes so people can listen to it.
We're on the Cool Kids Club to talk about Bubblegum Crisis, right?
Yeah, but then they also came back for when we did Kawajiri Month that one time to talk about, like, Wicked City and Goku Minette. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the Bubblegum Crisis, we had, like, them and, like, Jeff and Andy and Steve.
Jeff and Andy wasn't on at that time, but we had Sean Ryan, we obviously Steve, and then we had Amanda that was on there.
It was like everybody was on there.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea. I think in some ways it was a fun episode, but it was just such a chaotic mess with 5 to 6 people trying to talk all at once.
Uh-huh.
And only like 3 people did a majority of the talking.
Well, and Steve was, like, yelling at everybody.
Yeah.
It's like, don't fix your microphone. You need to get a new one. Don't swear in front of my daughters.
That was good. Back then when we didn't know what we were doing. I still feel that way kind of now, but I think we've gotten better about it. We've been able to hide it better.
Maybe.
Yeah, so let me get into Sol Bianca and what it's about. So Sol Bianca is basically five women that are space pirates, and they're in a kick-ass spaceship that's able to kind of dimensional warp in between subspace or something. The first OVA's plot is basically... Man, we've been going 25 minutes. Dadgum. All right, so the first OVA's plot is how they were able to hijack like a transport ship, and because they're, you know, the pirates, they raid and pillage or whatever, and they're able to get a container that has a kid in there, and the kid is wanting to go to a planet called Trace. And what's going on with Trace is the fact that there's a totalitarian empire or imperial leader that's taken over that planet and another planet called Uno, which he's ruling with an iron fist, and he's ruthless on executing people that want to rebel against him. And so he's got a bunch of, like, you know, citizens of Trace that work on this death trap of a shithole planet called Uno that are basically dying every single day working on some project for the king or whatever. And so then the Sol Bianca gets wrapped up into helping this kid out after he finally tells him, because he's reluctant against them at first because they're space pirates. But then eventually he tells them about these, like, the treasures that that are on Trace, especially something called Genosis, which is a prized treasure that everyone in the galaxy wants, but it's only available at Trace. You know, this kid mentions this to these pirates. So they eventually land on the planet, and then they realize the real mission of the kid isn't after the treasure because he wants to get there. But he's there to try to rescue his mom, and his mom is in this, like, I guess like a treasure trove room with a Genosis box, but she's like in a cryogenic state and has, like, you know, outfitted with like bling and jewelry all over her. And then they get to meet the Imperial leader, and he's after their ship because they know about the ship because they've been hijacking their transport ships or whatever. They are able to escape the planet, and then they're able to help out with the resistance on helping out the kid because he winds up getting caught up in the mix with the leader or whatever. And it's just, and it's that whole first OVA is a compact story. It's everything's joined together very well, and it's great. It's like its own one shot story. They're giving you what you need to know about. There's this cool ship. There's these, like, you know, badass pirate women. Here's a kid that they're trying to help. They're not really bad people, but they are pirates. And then they stop a rebellion and bring peace to this little solar system, and that's pretty much the end.
On the subject of the dub, some of the actors in it will be familiar to people from Evangelion. You know, when the tape starts off, you get, like, an ad for Eva and other ADV titles.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend, like, half of that time of the, like, general ADV ad on Eva. The others, it's like three or four like quick flashes of an image from like a Borgman or something.
Yeah, Super Adtron or something.
Yeah,
that was another Adtron promo they had. Yeah,
and then like there's a long Eva ad with like Gendo and the you know, the Eva unit,
mm-hmm.
All of that, and but yeah, you'll recognize like Asuka's voice very noticeably is one of
the yeah. So we can talk about the the dub cast real quick. So, well, I guess we need to talk about the characters. So then so the five women they're named after the months of the year, which is interesting. So yes. We have April B. Kirk, who is the blonde in this, the short hair blonde. She is voiced by Kim Seaver. Kim Seaver's been in a lot of things. I'll definitely go into her name later. Then we have May Jessica, which May is the kid, basically, girl. That's like, she's probably like 11 or 12 or whatever. And she's voiced by Kimberly Yates. And anybody who knows Gunsmith Cats, Kimberly Yates is also playing a little girl as May. in the OVA. And then Feb is the, she's the dark haired one, but I think she's like Middle Eastern or whatever. She's voiced by Laura Chapman. Laura Chapman, I was able to pick up on her voice as being the voice for Sylvia Stingray in the Tokyo 2040 dub. And in terms of Evangelion voice acting talent, we have Jenny Mann, who is the kind of the tomboy of the group with the blue bob cut hair, and she's voiced by Sue Alu, which Sue Alu plays Ritsuko Akagi in the TV series of Evangelion. And of course, June, the computer wizard of this OVA, is voiced by Tiffany Grant, and Tiffany Grant is the voice of Asuka Soryu Langley, or Langley Soryu, anyways. What's also interesting is that I like to call this anime My Two Gendos. Because we have Gendo from the TV series as one character, who is John Swasey. Tristan McAvery was from the TV series, and John Swasey was from the Rebuild movies. So, yeah, we have our two Gendos in here. And then there's other voice acting talent like Brett Weaver, who was also in Gunsmith Cats and some other titles as well. I'm pulling up Kim Seaver because I didn't list anything for her, but so she's actually got a very limited voice acting, but she was also in Evangelion as Yui Ikari, or Yui. So she voiced Yui.
That's Shinji's mother, right?
Yes, and then she was also Alita in the Panzer Dragoon OVA that we talked about very, very briefly a long time ago. Forgettable. she was in the Dirty Pair Flash OVA as Yuri also. Because you have Kay and Yuri in Dirty Pair. So that's kind of the notable things I'm looking at right here. But she hadn't done anything else, so she was kind of like early ADV dubbing, it looks like.
What about that boy that seemed like he had a child actor?
Oh, that's Jay. Zeidman. He's only been in two roles.
That's good.
As Rem and Sol Bianca. And a character in the Blue Sea TV series.
Okay.
So that's all he. That's all the only thing Anime News Network has credited him for.
He was pretty bad.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, I was like, I never heard this person voice anything else in any other anime I've heard from ADV. So he must have been like, this job doesn't pay enough. I'm out of here, or he must have found something better. I don't know.
He's one of those child actors that kind of just mumbles his lines. And has sort of an annoying voice.
I don't know. Maybe I think maybe like Matt Greenfield was like, "Where do we get a kid?" And then like you know, he got like one of the like secretaries at ADV that brought their son in, you know, from school or whatever. It's summer vacation. He just like I just see Matt Greenfield grabbing the kid and putting him in a voice booth and like, "Here, read these lines. You're this kid. Go, chop."
Yeah, I think that's kind of how like lower budget things used to do child actors. They would just get a random child in and they'd just be like, do it.
Yeah, I can imagine like the mom is just like, where did he do that to my son, Matt? He's like, he's working for me. He's like, you can't make a kid work for you. Yes, I can. It's the anime industry. We're top dog here. We got to compete with those, you know, SOBs over at CPM. They think they're better dubbers than we are, but we'll show them. And CPM's dubs are not very great at all either, so.
I posted in the chat saying maybe that explains Little John from Volta S5.
Oh man, no, I don't think that's the same kid. So, anyways,
he was probably paid even less than the ADV kid.
I don't know how this like. I mean, this was early anime company days where everyone was trying to figure everything out on the fly. So, I will say this, I think what really, yeah, cause like one of the things that when I mentioned to Mike Tool that should be the big thing about Sol Bianca is the fact that they're in one of the early, in the raids in the very beginning of the OVA, they come across a like space sniper rifle. And in order to get the girls out from getting executed on the planet, June and May are on the Sol Bianca hiding or whatever on this orbital ring around the planet. And so then June's able to go out there with the space sniper rifle and is able to pick off like all these like minions and soldiers or whatever at this execution place, like from out above the atmosphere. That's like, you know, maybe 20 miles away or 10 miles up or something like that. With pretty much GoGo 13 pinpoint accuracy. which is like pretty, it's a pretty awesome action scene, how they escape or whatever. And that's like one of the fun things about this anime, in terms of the action. There's also pretty cool that the ship can also like interdimensional warp into a bigger spaceship in order to raid it and then like rescue the mother and save the day. And then of course, like April gets a revenge on the leader, Batros, like cutting her face or whatever. It's just like really awesome. Like if you ever like, it's one of these like, if someone's like, oh, they don't make enough like female positive like, you know, anime out there, then like Soul Bianca is definitely like the runner up there. It's the same as Bubblegum Crisis. Like it's an empowering women anime, but I mean it's written by guys that are like, you know, I want a girl that, you know, kicks ass. Like what if we just made a guys anime but just put women and they're doing awesome stuff? And that's no different than like Marvel movies with like Miss Marvel and like Black Widow or whatever. So like I'd say this is up there for like female empowered anime that women should definitely check out.
Yeah, this was made kind of during that period where there were a lot of girl anime like Burn Up or Gunsmith Cats or Bubblegum Crisis. There
Burn Up, I wouldn't like put that. It in the same great league as Soul Bianca. that original OVA is it's fun to watch, but it's got its fan service-ness in it. I mean, like the first OVA of Soul Bianca was like there's hardly like no fan service. I think there's like a nipple slip. A brief one from June or Janny. And then like there's nothing after that. Like you can barely tell there's a nipple. I think after seeing it like maybe the fourth or fifth time, like years later, I was like, wait a sec, that's a nipple. Like,
what scene is this?
It's like when they're talking over the kid about like the Genosis like treasure or whatever. And like she's lounging on the couch, but she, you know, she just has like a top on or whatever. And then, like, she's leaning over. There's clear side boob there, but, like, it's, like, the fabric of, like, the shirt and her nipple sort of blend together. And then you have to, like, I think you have to, like, really look to see that it's a nipple. But it's, like, it's not just, like, in-your-face nipples or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. If you missed it, that's exactly the point. It's, like, I wouldn't even count that as nothing if you could never, like, there was a nipple in this. Like, I imagine, like, seeing this on, like, you know, a tape copy from Starz Network. I don't even think when I saw this, Starz did anything for censorship on it. They probably just left it in there because it was probably like, no one's going to notice there's a nipple. Like, it's so, maybe they blurted out. I don't remember. But, like, I remember, like, I didn't think there was a nipple in it until, like, I saw, like, one of the subtitle copies. Like, wait, I never saw that before.
I think that since Starz is premium, they can just air that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's satellite TV, so like they didn't have to like, you know, adhere to cable network censorship or whatever, or local broadcasting things or whatever. There was no like safe laws or anything like that. It's, you know, people are paying, you know, whatever a month for this. So if we show, you know, boobs at 2 p.m, we can do whatever we want. People are paying for it.
Yeah. I think that there's some sort of concept of like maybe people who buy HBO will have parental controls on it so that their children will not be watching it or something.
Yeah.
Although it's not like there isn't stuff that's TVMA just on basic cable also. But I guess you can't show even on TVMA on like Adult Swim, you can't show nipples.
Even though
that's like the only thing really. Oh yeah, that too. That's
they can't show any kind of bodily extracts, but they'll definitely have no problem showing organs and blood squirting everywhere.
Right, yeah, they won't have a problem with, like, the room full of dead classmates in the first episode of Dead Man Wonderland or anything like that. But they'll air, you know, almost any, like, fan service on Kill la Kill, except for, you know, like, that part where she got fingered by her mother and, I think there was like one battle scene where they had to edit out some shots of breasts or something, but I mean, they can get away with a lot now compared to what they used to be able to.
Yeah.
On Cartoon Network, but I mean, I think even back in the 90s and 2000s on Starz, it probably was like HBO where you could show pretty much whatever. Like I saw the first episode of Game of Thrones a few months ago and it's like lots of rape, lots of nudity.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like standard now for premium channels.
I just know like every time there's some sort of like some character got raped on there was always some sort of outcry on the internet about it. And oh, yeah. I mean, like, I remember on podcasting.
Well, I saw like one episode and it's like, if that offends you, why are you watching?
Yeah, exactly. Like, did you think it was going to get better? It's not. That's Game of Thrones.
Right. I saw like one episode. It's like, okay, I don't really need to see this, but you know, whatever, if people want to see it, but I don't see like why you would watch it. And then you're like, oh, I have to keep seeing this, but I hate it. And so, oh, all right. Well, that's
which is why they're miserable people complaining on the internet about every little thing that offends them because they want to feel better about themselves.
Right. Yeah. And there was even like a senator that issued some like denunciation of some rape scene in Game of Thrones. I think it was Claire McCaskill from Missouri who, just got voted out over her voting against Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. And will not be there in a week or two, but she like sent some long Twitter rant about like this show demeans women and blah blah blah. Okay, but you watched like dozens of episodes while live tweeting about it instead of like doing your job.
And people complain that Trump sits around all day and watches Fox News.
Right. So, like, yeah, I mean, if you look at like Senator Chuck Grassley, he's always like tweeting about like the History Channel has the wrong shows on or whatever. It's not like Trump invented the concept of tweeting about a show.
Yeah, Trump didn't invent the concept of not of like lounging or slacking off at your job.
Yeah.
Basically, this is just a big, this whole episode, if nobody can tell, is a big fanboy love letter to why you should definitely watch Soul Bianca. At least the old OVAs. Maybe one day we'll get into watching the legacy OVAs and maybe my opinion on that will change or get better. I don't know, but I remember seeing it and I was not impressed with any of it, and yet I own it. So,
yeah, I saw that at one point, but I don't remember much about it.
Yeah, I don't remember much about it either. Like, I think probably legacy explains like they probably explain more on the backstory of the ship and like where it came from and how everyone got together. I remember sort of that, but like I can't retain any of it in my brain from what I remember.
So, I mean, it was okay, I guess.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah, that was pretty much it.
It had like I guess better graphics than this because it was made more recently. But
yeah,
this is a term of being from that particular like OVA boom era. You have the great like logo, which looks like a 80s heavy metal band or action show logo or something.
Yeah,
like
the way
the letters all intersect.
Yeah,
SOL.
I like the typography for the Soul Bianca logos on this, so I have no problem with that whatsoever. The second OVA, I feel like they didn't really care because the second one was like a thin like text, and it just said Soul Bianca 2, and that was it.
Yeah, I was like, why did they change it?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first one, if you just watch the first OVA, you'll feel like it's a complete, it is really a complete story. Like, it's, it tells you everything you need to know, like, and, you know, you figured, you know, like, do I really need to see the second one? Well, you can if you want to, would be my argument on that.
So.
I will say this, we're about to move on to that, but, like, I won't spoil what the Genosis thing was about, but it kind of, it basically relates to like, well, I don't want to say anything. Okay, so I'll leave that up to the viewers. So they did talk about, they do bring up Genosis again. They didn't just like drop that off. But anyways, so a year later or so, they came up with a second OVA for Soul Bianca 2, and I believe, from what I understand, that Soul Bianca 2 is going to tie into more of the backstory on the ship and the characters. Because the second OVA kind of went into detail about that a little bit, or was like leaving breadcrumbs to where it would be. Sadly enough, from what I understand, and at least what has been online for years, is the fact that the second OVA didn't sell really well in Japan. So then they never bothered to make the third one to tie all these like loose ends up. They created all these like plot points to try to cover in the third OVA, and then when the third OVA wasn't, you know, created because of low sales, and then everything's just kind of dropped, and then so you're left with like a cliffhanger ending for the second one. I've always looked at the second OVA as, I don't think fondly of it because it's always a complete story, but it's not bad. But for me, it's just something I want to watch. My enthusiasm for Soul Bianca drops just a little bit.
The second one, I did like how they brought in this new character, which is voiced by Shuichi Ikeda, and he sounds just like his version of Char. So that was interesting to see, but he is one of those loose ends where they bring him in and they say, oh, he has some past with some girl, but the girl denies it. And then,
he claims that the Sol Bianca ship is his. So there's something relating to that and it's basically kind of getting into like the backstory of the Sol Bianca ships. Like you find out that, I think it's June. Wait, who did I say? June is linked to the ship. The ship actually has like an AI system in it called G. We can go ahead and talk about the ship real quick. The ship is kind of like, it's big enough to have like sort of its own, like it's able to grow plant life and like, nutrients. Like it's able to have like an apple tree in the middle of like the hangout area. Like in the second OVA, there's like a waterfall area that like the girls are out there, like April and Janie are out there just lounging around just to kill time. Like you can, like it's just amazing that like the ship can contain all this. I don't know if it was a hologram or what, but it seemed pretty darn real to me. The rooms are like really decorated nicely. There's all this open area. It's kind of like a big loft or whatever that each of these girls have. And like they have like a the helm of the ship, which is like basically you're like in these little like clear pods or whatever. So you get the each person has a role in what they do and how the ship operates on shields and weaponry and navigation and all that. I think that's about it. So June and the ship are linked together in some way. And it even showed some sort of backstory, like they're part of must have been some war where there was more than one ship. And I guess their ship, like, sort of left the other ships in some battle, so they're considered as traitors, but that's kind of like, it's an open-ended thing, it's kind of like leading to that. And then there's also, I can nerd on Sol Bianca for a while. Like, I think there's just a whole lot of meat in there that is just undiscovered. But I kind of mentioned the link of the ship, and I thought I was going to mention something else, and I can't remember, and I probably will later. But this second OVA, I was going to talk. So the ship is made out of some like material that is very valuable in the universe, which is called Pasha, not pasta, but Pasha. And the ship is made out of Pasha entirely, and so it's already a unique ship in itself. And so like it starts out with these with the crew trying to get a Pasha shipment from a dealer in like some sort of orb, like space casino place or luxury craft or something. And then these other like pirates come in there to try to steal it and to get into the safe to get it out. And then there's a battle that ensues from that. And they have like these teleportation like jet fighter things that they're able to travel through walls, but then that kind of backfires on them when Janie gets a gun and shoots one of them, and it messes up, so then, like, the guy's body gets cut in half. There's another one where, like, the guy gets shot, like, in the middle of a portal or whatever, and he just winds up jettisoning out into space and exploding.
Yeah, that happened in the second episode.
So what are your thoughts on the second OVA, or even your thoughts on the OVA overall? Like, because I could talk about it, and I don't want to continue talking right now, so.
Yeah. I guess the second one was okay. I kind of enjoyed the first one, even though I thought the dub was not so great. It was kind of just, you know, even if the dub isn't good, it's sort of an interesting, like, time capsule of, apparently this is from 1993, that the first tapes came out from ADV, but I don't know if maybe the dub came later.
Because
Wikipedia mentions 93 is
the
first subtitle tape.
Okay, I have the release dates on ANN. So there's 13, but yeah, so so 90.
Maybe you said 97 for the 90, dub, right?
Yeah, so 95 for the first OVA came out for both dub and sub. And then the Laserdisc came out in 95. 97 is when the second OVA came out, but it was only subbed. So I guess they did a reprinting of the dub in 97, which is what I have.
Okay. Well, that's interesting that it did well enough to get it reprinted, but not to have the second episode dubbed.
Yeah, I think probably around this time they're like, what should we spend our money on, Sol Bianca dubbing or Evangelion stuff? Let's do Evangelion, because that's been their cash cow for many years until they lost the license to that. And now Netflix yeah. has it, surprisingly. So.
Yeah, so it was on, yeah, it was definitely from 97, because I guess in 95, Ava had not yet come out, right? Even in Japan, I don't think.
You know what? Let's, yeah, well, I mean, Ava came out in 95 in Japan, but I'm not sure when, let me see. I'm not sure when Ava came out in America. Let me just click on Sulu, because she'll tell me exactly.
I thought it was maybe 96. Or something.
Let's see. So, let me go to released episode titles, release dates. Okay, that's DVD. Oh, it's only giving me the DVD releases for Evangelion. It doesn't tell me the tapes on the TV series. Wait a sec. I can tell you exactly, because that box of VHS tapes that came with Soul Bianca, the guy included a sealed copy of the first Evangelion tape. So, I've got it in my hand. And I'm rattling it around, and there should be a release date on it. So, okay, it says 96.
Okay.
So, the tape I have in my hand is from 96. It's still sealed. It's got a sticker on it, too, a price sticker for $24.95. And the dub for this tape, at the time, was only two episodes of tape. My how anime has changed in terms of distribution in America. So yeah, so Soul Bianca the dub and the sub came out before Evangelion did. So the 97 tape that came out would have the previews for Evangelion on it, which is what you saw. So that makes sense, because they were just getting it out.
Yeah, okay, so I'm on the Wikipedia page for Evangelion. It says the 13 VHS tapes were released from August 20th, 1997 to July 7, 1998, containing two episodes each. And that was the English dub in the U.S. So this would have been coming out around the same time as the first tape.
Okay, that's interesting. You're saying that it's interesting. You're saying how the Wikipedia claims the dub came out in '97, which is what I would have thought it would have been. But I just held a tape in my hand that's got ADV in their year of 1996 on it.
Yeah.
So it's clearly 1996 when it first came out, and Wikipedia has been known to be wrong.
This is sourced to an article from 1996. So they, like, straight up, like, didn't even put information for the
maybe,
source.
Maybe they didn't distribute until 97, but they had the rights in 96. That could be it, too.
Well, now I'm seeing, like, Evangelion. The link is to, like, a Laserdisc release. And it says January 28, 1997, Evangelion Deluxe Collection. And then it mentions the tape, it will be released on tapes with two episodes, and also deluxe laser discs with four episodes per disc. And the laser disc was $60.
I could see that, because they can put one or two episodes on one side, and then two episodes on the other side of the laser disc, because you can just swap them out.
Oh, elsewhere on this page, there's a link to the third VHS tape, saying it came out on January 21st, 1997. So, yeah. I don't know why they put these false release dates on Wikipedia.
My guess on that is either ADV had the license for it in 96 and then didn't put it out to distribute until 97. Or it might have been they were trying to distribute in 96 and it didn't just come out till 97. That could be it too. Or the people that wrote this Wikipedia article are full of crap, and that's also a good possibility too.
Yeah, and then there's a link to another article, the second source. This is the second Laserdisc set that came out in 1998 on March 24th, which has episodes 5 through 8. So, yeah, and then it doesn't mention anything about the VHS tapes on that one either.
I assume all the VHS tapes might have came out by 98 by then. So, I...
By 98, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to dig out my Anamerica issues to figure out whatever I have on release dates for Evangelion.
Hold on, I'll be right back. I have to go to the bathroom, and then I'm going to go get VHS tapes of Ava, because I have some.
Oh, boy. Oh, shoot. You know what I could be talking about? So, it's after Christmas. And you guys are probably like, hey, what deals are going on for RightStuff.com? This intermission is brought to you by RightStuff.com. And let's take a look at what RightStuff has in terms of sales for their anime. The day after Christmas. Which, this isn't going to come out to January, but hey, you can always get a deal on RightStuff at any time at all. So on the main page, I'm looking at the Pet Labor Ultimate Set for $64. That includes all three movies, the TV series, the OVAs, all OVAs, all in one compact Blu-ray edition from ADV, aka Made in Japan, because this is all relevant. So, I don't know how long this deal is going to
last. I'm back.
Okay, hey, I was just in the middle
of... I have four tapes.
Okay, I was just in the middle of trying to do a RightStuff promotion during the break, and I mumbled some other stuff that's probably going to be in the recording, and I don't really care, so...
Oh.
No, okay. I was just telling the listeners about the great deals from RightStuff.com. RightStuff has the Pat Labor Ultimate Collection for $64.99, including the TVs, all the TVs, all the OVAs, and the movies. So that is also an ADV title, I guess. Oh, hey, you can get Zabungo for $24, all of Zabungo. That's pretty good. Let's see what else they got on here. The G-Gundam Ultra Edition Collection is still $148 and still in stock on their website, and it probably will be for a while. I need to get this. Dadgummit, $148 is a darn good steal. But I don't have the money to spend on that. All right, so...
$148 all right, for Gumshoe.
All right, Sherlock, what's the Gumshoe got to say on the case of the Evangelion release dates? Let's wrap this case up.
Yeah, the first two tapes say... 1996,
mm-hmm.
And I have tape 5 and tape 11, and they both say 1997.
Yeah, I think there might have been 12 or 13 tapes total in that release. So, no, it would have had to be 13 if it was 26 and there was two episodes per tape.
Right.
So they had to finish up by 97, for sure.
So I guess they put out one a month or something.
That sounds about right. Oh, they got Red Photon Zillion for $32 on RightStuff. And something terrible I should have not clicked on a manga called Inner Species Reviewers Manga Volume 1. I'm not going to dig any further in this. I'm just going to shut down my web browser. That's all the fun stuff you can get from RightStuff. Okay. Are we? Did we solve the case on the missing Evangelion release date dates?
Yes, we did.
Okay. The case is solved. That's how we roll on this podcast. Yeah, we're talking about Soul Bianca. Let me see. What were your? I think I was asking your comments on, and then we got into that whole malarkey on release dates on Evangelion.
Right. Yeah, I was counting on like how, you know, had an Ava advertisement at the start of the tape or something like that.
That's how it all started. Dadgummit, I should have known.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. It definitely has that sort of. You know, early 90s anime OVA charm, and it's the first episode is very self-contained, like you said.
Yeah.
It's got a complete story, and I like the design of the spaceship and everything, so it was pretty good. And then the second one was, you know, shorter, and it was not really as much of a full story, but I mean, it still had its moments, you know, had a lot of energy, and, you know, stuff was happening the whole time, and
yeah,
it wasn't boring or anything, so...
Yeah, I was looking up. Fine. So I was looking up some of the staff people that worked on this, on what they've done. Like, all right. So speaking of the ship design, the guy who did that, his name is Atsushi Takauchi. He's worked on a lot of things since Soul Bianca. So he's done like the mech designs for those CGI Appleseed movies.
Mm.
He was also an animation. Assistant animation director for episode 4 of Bubblegum Crisis. I worked on Gal Force. From what I understand, a lot of these people like kind of work together with Studio Artmic on projects, so they kind of went back and forth. This guy also worked on the Panzer Dragoon OVA. So, yeah, he's done some. He was also the mechanical designer for Rhea Gal Force. He worked on a. Tenchi Muyo was an animation director, the OVA, did the concept designs for GXP TV series, and he's done a lot of design work, or was it a animation director for like different Tenchi properties. So this guy's been pretty busy. I think I can kind of see that because, like, you know, you got spaceships. So, like, this guy's been basically doing spaceship designs. Because, like, you kind of think of how unique the spaceships look in, like, Tenchi Muyo and Galforce when I think about that. So that actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah, Tenchi has this weird stuff with, like, the Ryo Ohis that turn into spaceships and all
that.
Yeah,
yeah, like the... I do see that Masami Obari worked as a key animator on this too, so he was finding work. Obari's always been busy in some way, so this must have been like when he wasn't really doing any. I don't think it might have been before he was directing anything.
On both episodes, or
it was just just the first one. I honestly feel like the first episode. Do what?
He probably is the one who animated the NIF stuff.
I don't know, man.
He would have made it more obvious.
Yeah. I think this is probably the time before, like, Obari was, like, thinking up, like, if I had my own anime, I wanted it to be about girls that turn into hot rods. Oh, Viper GTS. That sounds awesome. And then it makes into a concept years later. Or I want to make a fighting game anime off of Fighting Gift, but there isn't any good ones out there. I'm hoping it's somebody with a ball cap that has, like, two words on it. And if that happens, I will direct that anime and make it into a great motion picture. And then that happened with Fatal Fury. So, I guess it's like when Obari was starting out, I'd say. I will say the director for the first episode of the first OVA also directed episode 4 of Bubblegum Crisis. He was the director for all the Galforce OVAs too. Did he do? Yeah, he also did. He was director for Rhea Galforce. So this guy came over from Artmic and worked on this. And then the second OVA is done by another guy, Hiroki Hayashi. He also worked on Bubblegum Crisis also. He was the director. He was also director for OVA episode 4. Maybe I'm getting my two directors mixed up. I don't know. Let me check Akiyama real quick. He was series director Akiyama for the first 4 episodes. So there's a whole lot of interlapping over. Actually, Obari was working on Bubblegum Crisis.
Yeah, he did mech design in the 80s.
Yeah, but this is like 1990, so this wasn't too far after. So, like, Obari was able to get work in between Artmic and AIC projects. Well, they were all kind of worked together anyways. So they're kind of like a really unique family.
But this was before he did Fatal Fury.
Yeah, I think Fatal Fury came out like a couple years after. The OVAs at least came out a couple years after Soul Bianca did. Let's see, the character designer for Soul Bianca is Naoyuki Onda. And I feel like I've seen his designs off and on. Like, he worked on the... he's worked as an animation director for Armored Age 3. He did a character designs for episode 5 of Gotham Knight, and I have not seen Gotham Knight.
That's that Batman movie that aired on Toonami.
Yeah. I didn't even see when it was on Toonami either.
It was a long time ago.
He worked on the Berserk movies as character designer. Let me see if this is the right one.
I haven't seen those, but I hear they're pretty bad.
Yeah, so he worked on he's done character design for the Berserk, the CGI movies. He did work on Blue Gender. He worked on Bubblegum Crisis. Let's see. Did key animation for Detonator Orgun and Cybernetics Guardian. And we did review Cybernetics Guardian long ago.
Yeah.
Now he's been busy, so... He's also worked on Gundam in some capacity. It was key animation for Odin Starlight, Photon Space Sailor Starlight. He did character designs for Parasite Dolls, which is another Bubblegum Crisis property. Okay, that kind of actually makes sense.
There's a review of that for Cybernauts after we left.
Did what?
And Steve did a review of Parasite Dolls for Cybernauts after we left, but I don't think we've ever reviewed it.
No, we haven't. Parasite Dolls for me was like, that's hard for me to own. Like, I just think it's that bad. This guy also did character designs for another anime we reviewed, Toy, the musical one.
That's the music anime.
Yeah, he did character design and animation director for Toy also. He's also worked on Tenchi properties as either key animation or animation director. So yeah, he worked on animation for Edeon. So yeah, this guy's been around. He also did character design for those Resident Evil CGI movies, which I've only seen Generation, but I have not seen Damnation. Those are also not good. So,
are they as bad as the live action ones, or worse? Or
I don't remember. I was just like, oh, all right. So these guys were the people who worked on this had already had some really good talent. Was working on some really good titles at the time. So yeah, I felt like there was more effort put into the first OVA than the second one, just in terms of what I saw, like animation wise and kind of detail. Like I felt like the ship wasn't as detailed in the second OVA, but I felt the quality felt about the same. But I don't know. I think there might have been different projects going on, so then people were like, we're trying to rush to get it out or something. But
yeah. I guess that kind of happens when you go past the first episode, just kind of trying to sell a product.
Yeah, and I guess
like, here's a new franchise, and you have to like get people really into it.
Yeah, I think they did the first one to sell it, and then I think they might have done well enough where it was like, okay, we can probably get two or three more out and telling this story. And then by the time the second one didn't sell well, they were like, all right, we're dropping this. You guys are going somewhere else. So, and that kind of sucks because like I think there's just so much meat inside Soul Bianca that. Like I would love to get a hold of the property and write like novels for it. I think it's just so interesting because it's like I want to know more about where the women came from and the ships, and I don't want to ever tie any of that to the legacy OVAs. So
did they ever do like a manga for this or anything, or it's just the OVAs?
Okay? So let me pull up some trivia on ANN. And here's some trivia on it. So in the mid-1990s, 80 Vision was flirting with operating a publishing line called Graphic Vision. Among their plans, there was a comic book based on Soul Bianca, which was drawn by Lorraine Rains, who did ElfQuest. She's known for doing ElfQuest. And she also worked on Soul Bianca as well for ADV. Only one issue saw the Day of Light, which was the first part of a multiverse story. Graphic Vision was stopped shortly thereafterwards. So I want to get a hold of a comic book of Soul Bianca that's out there, and
you don't have it?
I know, I've never even heard of it until I just read this, so now it's something else Soul Bianca related that I'm going to be searching for at every comic book shop if I can ever find it. I'm actually curious if the book is even on eBay at this point. Let me check eBay real quick.
There's some things to search to distinguish it from just the show, like with the subtitle?
I don't know. Let me type Soul Bianca
graphic visions or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. The only thing it shows. Well, what's this? I think I found it.
You did?
Yeah, yeah. It's a buck. Oh. It's a buck. Buy it now. $170 from Arlington, Texas. Oh my God, I'm getting this right now.
I just searched. There's like two listings for $1.70. Yeah.
Well, here I go. I'm gonna buy it. Buy it now. I didn't think it was going to be, like, this cheap. Oh, what the hell, eBay? Why can't I just buy it? I just clicked the buy it now. Okay, there it goes. Now it's taking me to the PayPal. All right, now I'm ready. So I'm buying this. So there. That goes. We're solving everything. I think everything's just impossible for Soul Bianca, but then I never seen it so available. And now what I really want is, maybe I have to make, like, a resin model of this ship. Or maybe there's one out there, but I also love to have like a design or like a design book of Soul Bianca, and I'm not aware of any that exist. But I could be wrong if I just did a quick search on like Amazon Japan or something. So I don't know. We'll see. I didn't think it was that quick. I was like, man, there's probably gonna be nothing listed for this Soul Bianca comic, and I was able to find it in 2 seconds.
You were ready to be like searching the world for this.
Yeah, I was going to spend the next 10 years of my galactic expedition and legacy and adventure to find this one Soul Bianca comic, and then it's like, oh, eBay. Just like eBay was like, no, you don't need to waste any more of your time on Soul Bianca. We'll do the work for you. Buy it from this guy. So that took care of that.
Do you have any of these other ADV comics?
No, I've never even heard of this. I never even heard of Graphic Visions. I highly doubt I've ever seen Soul Bianca in comic form, so I'm about to get that shipped to me. Merry Christmas to myself.
Like, it sounds like one of these kind of like cringy early, what did they call it back then? Japanimation, like try tie-in type things that Tokyo Pop would do and that sort of thing, where they would try to do like an American interpretation of an anime.
Well,
I don't know if it always worked so well.
Well, let's off the top of my list on the people that did that. You got the comics from Comico, Antarctic Press, maybe some Viz, I don't know. But I can tell you off the top of my head the titles that have been adapted by American comic writers and designers, which is like Robotech, Captain Harlock, this, Soul Bianca.
They did a Queen Emeraldus too.
Yeah, they did a Queen Emeraldus comic book. They never touched Area 88, I can think of. So
there's like, aren't there Dirty Pair?
Yes, Dirty. Where Adam Warren did the Dirty Pair comics. He also did Bubblegum Crisis, which I own the Bubblegum Crisis like booklet thing on that. I know that can't be it, but maybe that might be the main ones. I know Robotech was like,
I didn't do anything like that for Initial D, did they?
What? Someone else do an Initial D comics? No.
Well, that seems like the kind of thing Tokyo Pop would have done. I was just asking.
They were legit in getting it from Kodansha and putting it out until Kodansha was like, you guys suck. We're pulling it after like volume 31 or 32 or whatever. And then Initial D has never come out in manga form since then. And America just doesn't sell well here. Apparently, I guess it sold well for Tokyo Pop. But like when Funimation got the anime series, they're like, all right, we're going to redub it. And that's all we're going to do for. And then we got, fourth stage, third and fourth stage out, and they never tackled fifth or final. So it's just like a real shame because I would love to own it, but it's kind of like it probably just didn't sell well enough for people to care. So I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Man, so we're almost at an hour 20, and it's mostly been Soul Bianca talk between two OVAs. I didn't really sum up the plot for the second one, but it was going to go somewhere. I think I wanted to mention that, like, you know, with June being connected to the ship, the Soul Bianca, like, it kind of left a cliffhanger at the end where, like, Suichi Ikeda's character, like Yui or whatever, had some other girl that was, like, another operator for another ship, maybe. And it seemed like there was a design for a ship, like in the backdrop, and then it goes to credits, like it's going to lead to something. And it's just like, crap, I wish there was this expanded more. And because I know this legacy OVAs didn't, they told their own story. They never continued from where the OVA was going to go. And I wonder if there's even any scripts out there from that, after that second OVA, that like the director or like the screenplay writers have or something, and they've just been sitting on it in a closet for 25 years. I mean, I don't know, but...
Well, speaking of bonus material relating to this, it was on the dubbed VHS tape production artwork from the first episode.
Yeah, but there was also... It also existed on the second episode, too, but like they put up a warning, like, please put your VHS on slow to look at it, because it's like literally a five-second blurb of everything.
Oh,
whereas,
really?
Like, ADV was able to kind of draw that out, where it was like, you know, 3 seconds or 4 seconds of concept art before the next one. So they kind of gave it more TLC care on that. At least in the dub version. So the files that I've had that I put in the torrent, the ones that are subtitled, the ones that have been online forever, and those are the ADV subs. So maybe the second one, they're just like, well, let's just skim forward 10 seconds of concept art to save tape or something. I don't know. But, at least in the dub, like, you can kind of, like, put it on play and pause it and kind of enjoy the artwork. And it's on VHS, so the quality is, so you know, kind of only, it's only limited to so much. But it's kind of decent on what you can see, at least. But other than that, yeah, I wish Soul Bianca would get another revival that's not Legacy. So, and I would love to get, like, some sort of... I'll tell you my big plan is, like, I would love to, I mean, I've thought about this so much, so, like, I like to be, like, do kind of what my friend's company does, limited run, but do it for like anime, and somehow get the rights for Soul Bianca and put it out and have like a big, like, you know, concept art book that be bundled with it, and like put it out like on Blu-ray and have it like in the best quality ever and remaster it and bring in, like, you know, put that bring in that original dub on there, maybe even get the second OVA dubbed, and then even maybe even print it on Laserdisc. Because I'd be that crazy and just have it like, you know, oh, put it on Kickstarter and whoever pays for it is how many copies I'm going to make. So
you'd be lucky to get one donor. It'd probably be you.
I think there's going to be more than like one person. I can tell you that like Mike Toole would probably be on that. And it's just a dream that it's an idea that I love to do, is, you know, if and when I ever want to really put a lot of work into doing an anime distribution company and do something like Discotech, but
that would be your vanity project if you won the lottery or something.
I know. I can't take any more. I don't want to take any more loans out either. the thing is, like, I this is like, if it's going to come out, it's going to come out from Discotech, but right. It's so like the original OVA. It's hard. Like, who really has the rights? Who can get a hold of it? Who's the right people to talk to like talk about it at least? So I think this is, and as far as I can tell for other podcasters, I don't think any other anime podcast has reviewed Soul Bianca or even really talked about it. I know Anime World Order brought it up briefly in one episode and didn't even dissect it the way I've dissected it for the past, you know, almost an hour and a half. Because that just shows how much I absolutely love Soul Bianca. I don't expect you to have that same like epiphany in your mind after seeing it, like, oh, this is the greatest OVA ever. You're like, this is good, but I mean, like, you know, like, I have my weird thing that I'm obsessed over that, like, I don't expect anybody else to be obsessed over. Kind of like Gerald Rathcoll being obsessed over Galforce. Like, I mean, I like Galforce, but like, that's his obsession. Like, that's what he loves and will love to the day he dies. And that makes it part of his uniqueness there.
Because I've never seen that.
I've seen all of Galforce. I own all of Galforce between VHS and DVD. So we will have to review it one day.
need to review the Gundam Origin the last couple episodes.
Yeah, I know. If we talk about Galforce, I want to bring Gerald on to talk about all of it if we can. It may be like a 3-hour podcast, but hey, that's what we normally do anyways, so.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. So we can go ahead and move on to closing remarks unless you got something else to say.
No, I have Chris Chan's stuff pulled up here for closing remarks relating to the dimension.
I can talk about the Bumblebee movie I saw.
Okay.
So, you go first.
What do we want to do first?
Talk about Chris Chan.
Okay. So yesterday some random person from Virginia posted on his Twitter account like a pastebin with their own docs for some reason.
Yeah.
We don't really know why, but they said in there like the dimensional merge is delayed for 20 years, and then they like listed their own name and phone number and address and stuff and claimed that like Chris lived there or something.
Yeah.
We don't really know what's going on with that, but I'm going to read off some Chris tweets here. He says the dimensional merge is still in process with its final steps before the apex. The psychic and soulful links and events I have been having are becoming more frequent, so I do know. And all of the deities have been working very hard together with me as a part of the group. And then there's like a picture that goes with the tweet that has like a pony jumping out of a monitor. And some guy like freaking out and falling out of his chair.
Yeah, because I would too.
And it says, to make this happen, I met Arceus. He prefers the pronunciation Arceus. And he is a very good Pokemon and deity to work and be friends with too. Anyway, for a while longer, I urge everyone of this world to find your true sight. So you can see your OCs, yours and everyone else's, branded and fan, that are local to you wherever you are, here in 1218's Earth. Everyone's mutual wish and destiny to find, meet, and hang out with all the OC individuals shall come true any moment now. Keep the faith and pray to us deities. He keeps asking people to pray to him and referring to himself as a deity lately. He's getting more and more off the deep end.
Jeez.
And that was right before the pace bend. And then after it, he said, okay, well, everyone, my hubby has spoken. He actually thinks that this, like, random person who's he hangs out with and smokes pot with is actually Magichan or something. Yeah. I am just shocked as all of you reading that, despite the doxing. I have told him not to do that before with his previous doxing tweet. Everyone enjoy your waking days, as the apex of the merge is going to happen. I think the waking days thing is our husband's claim that everyone's going to fall asleep for 20 years until the merge.
I ain't got time for that.
And then he says, make every day count. Do good for others and everyone around you. I have been enjoying my days as well and as possible and being kind to others, and I am in my true nature. Starlink without the R-Wing has been fun too. He keeps complaining that the R-Wing, like Star Fox accessory, is not available for PS4.
Oh my gosh.
Which Nintendo is not going to make that available. With the sales, easiest completed collection since Skylanders Spyro's Adventure, minus the multiple figure wave weight. Final thought for now. Be kind to everyone and pray to us deities. The CPUs, God, aka Emmanuel. He keeps referring to God as Emmanuel. Jesus, Buddha, and all who else. Thank you all. Electric Bolt, Blue Heart, Electric Bolt emojis. And then a bunch of crying emojis. I have to remain strong for you all. He's like upset about the delay of the merge. And then he says, let me clarify. While the millions of all of you who will be hibernating for 20 years, I won't be. I have my destiny to uphold in the completed dimension, along with the few who are destined to follow me and help out. And destined and follow me are capitalized to make it even more divine.
Make it official.
And I will be immediately in the completed dimension, transported there safe and sound, without missing a beat at all. I am concerned about all of you who won't be able to make the immediate jump with us. Rest assured, though, my fellow deities and I will make positive all of you, and everything will be safe and sound, and able to pick up right where you left off, right before the apex of the merge. So know that I and the select few will hold the fort of everything here in the completed 1C211987 dimension. And just so we're clear, I had deleted the original tweet of my hubby Magichan, and here are the details of the merge and how it went down. To be clear, it is all of you who will disconnect. The majority of people of Earth 1218 and sleeps for 20 years. So I guess he went from everybody is going to die to fall asleep. So maybe that's a slight improvement. But I don't know.
I can just imagine people waking up in like that Plinkett-esque video where like they talk about Star Wars Force Awakens, where he's like, oh, he's like, oh, God, I woke up with a beard, and I look like an old Gandalf man, but I don't like to rape little boys. I gotta piss! Speaking of Plinkett, let's review Bumblebee. Nah. I thought about doing it in a terrible Plinkett-esque voice, but I'm probably not.
You can't do it for that long.
I mimic Plinkett voice every now and then. I don't know if it comes out of my head or my mouth, but it's like I can't do it as well as Alex Jones. So I'd rather just stick with Alex Jones as much as I can.
I think Alex Jones might be our top impression. He's just like easy to do because he's just this weird, like angry fat guy.
Yeah.
You kind of just do it like a gruff voice, and it sounds like him.
Yeah. Well, there was, speaking of Alex Jones, he had McGinnis on his show, and he tried to be. It was like a bad attempt, or maybe it's an actual proper attempt to indoctrinate Alex Jones into the Proud Boys, even though McGinnis has no part of it anymore, so he says.
And he's like, I quit. And then he goes on TV, and he starts like punching this guy, and he's like, name the cereal.
He just gets up and just starts like wailing on Alex Jones' arm. I mean, like, just to see Alex Jones being smacked around by another person is pretty entertaining. So I can't argue against that.
Yeah, he's yelling. He's like, cornflakes, frosted flakes, make it stop. He can't come up with five.
Yeah.
But then he still acts like, oh no, I'm an official member, even though he like failed the initiation.
I just like how McGinnis was just like, yeah, in high school, like if we messed up, we did. Like, it's basically what his initiation for McGinnis is the crap he did in high school, like being a dude bro jock. It's essentially how he worded it. He's like, yeah, you know, like when we like called each other out, like, you know, like we just get up and punch each other in the arm, and that's how we did to like, you know, get out of something or like the correct our you know, our the make it amends to our dude bro like football team or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I could see that, like. I don't know.
Yeah, the we talked about the Proud Boys before, but it's a really weird thing because it's like partly it's some sort of just like drinking club, like a fraternity or
yeah.
a group of guys that just hang out and have fun. But then it's also part like this weird, like he calls them like a street gang sometimes, like on the Joe Rogan episode. And they'll also like go out there and, you know, get into fights in the street with Antifa. And then, like, now that he's quit, they released some statement, and this, I guess, had happened already, like, when we last recorded, but then we didn't, I was, like, not fully up on it, because it had happened, like, literally that day. But they, some guy that they suspect is, like, a Stormfront poster came and took it over after Gavin left. They claim it's some guy called White Nationalist Law from Stormfront.
Oh, wow.
And, but then, in the post, that like had him claiming that he's in control of it. He's like, we disassociate ourselves from the alt-right and we are not white supremacists. And so there's this sort of weird thing where they're like trying to deny it, but at the same time, like they have these toxic people that are, you know, in there, and now that Gavin's gone.
It doesn't surprise me that like they have like a member from Stormfront in that association. And like, I like to look at Stormfront as just a good white supremacist parody site, even though I know those people are absolutely real. Which it can be, which to me is just funny, but then yet scary at the same time. Like, it's good to go on there once in a blue moon and just to get a chuckle on how crazy these people are, and then I'm done. And that's like pretty much my entertainment is that of Stormfront, and I just leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been proven that it's this guy. He's like super litigious, and he's like always sues everybody that refers to himself or the Proud Boys as a white supremacist.
Yeah.
Like, that was his previous role before Gavin quit, was like he was the group's lawyer. And so he spent all his time suing, like, the Daily Beast and the New York Times and everyone, because they would
gotcha.
Always say, like, the supremacist group, the Proud Boys, designated as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So, you know, that was his thing, is that he did, like, what Trump did, where he would, like, sue anyone that would talk bad about him. Like, what Trump did before he would run for president, like, Rosie O'Donnell badmouthed him or something, he would be like, this is defamation, I'm going to sue you.
Yeah, and even though it's kind of hard, it's like, Trump, your reputation has already been defamed by your own actions before Rosie ever said anything. But
right,
no, nothing
you
happens.
You don't own so. Your reputation.
Yeah, exactly.
That just is a part of reality.
Yeah.
And you have free speech, so people can say whatever they want about you, but...
Yeah.
I guess the question is, like, what if they just say something that they know is false, but how do you prove that somebody knows they're libeling someone and that it's not what they actually think, right?
Yeah, true.
But if you put up, like, a fight and make it seem like it's not true by, like, denouncing them or whatever, then I guess that's good for PR or something. I don't know. I'm sure there's some reason why Trump did that sort of thing. Like, it kept his name in the headlines longer or something to... always be suing people. And I remember he sued Bill Maher because he said he was the son of an orangutan. It's like, that's obviously a joke, but you're just like suing over it anyway, just so that people will keep watching The Apprentice.
Yeah, that's such an, like, it's so exaggerated, and it's clearly a joke, and, you know, it's... Yeah, a judge is going to be like, this is too stupid. Like, no, we're throwing this out. alright, so I can go ahead and talk about Bumblebee then. clear my throat. I will say this, Bumblebee as a Transformer movie, we should have gotten from the first movie. I really pray and hope that Michael Bay does not do another Transformers movie. Because that fifth movie, what was it, The Last Night? Like, I saw that on a date with my ex, and like I remember coming out there just like, God, that movie was so terrible. I can't even remember like anything about it. And then like for this one, it's taking place in 1987 or whatever, or in the late 80s. So it kind of really ties into G1 Transformers, which is the G1 Transformers live action movie is what, again, we should have gotten since the very first live action Transformer movie. And this one was done very well. Michael Bay had no involvement in it. Bumblebee is a Volkswagen. And the designs are very G1. Like, they had, like, this movie starts out with a battle on Cybertron. And, you know, got Starscream and Soundwave, like, in their original designs. I mean, they're kind of, like, you know, technologically improved instead of just being big blocky squares on animation cells. But, like, it really, really works.
Yeah, I saw some trailers for it and stuff, and it does look a lot more like G1 Transformers than, you know, the stuff that we got in the Bay movies, which Bumblebee was more like some modern sports car or something.
And... yeah, it was a cash-in for GM just to promote new vehicles that were about to come out, which was basically the Camaro.
Yeah. So in this, does Bumblebee speak or no?
He speaks in the beginning, and he's in a battle with another Decepticon. I don't know his name, but it's probably in the credits. And he gets, like, his voice modulator ripped out in that battle.
Okay.
So, but in this movie, he communicates the same way as he did in the Bayformers one, where he, like, used the radio or, like, sound bites to talk. So, yeah. Like, he was using the radio to communicate, like, how he felt. Like, there was a lot of things where, like, he communicated how he felt, like, through music that he found on the radio, if he scanned through the stations.
Uh-huh.
And this one is actually really nice because... it's got a girl that's like going through the death over a death of her father. So like Bumblebee's kind of like this father figure for her, and they have like a really like nice like friendship relationship there. man. And so then it's about these two like Decepticons that come to the planet, and they're trying to link. So because Earth is like basically the base of where like the Autobot resistance is going to happen, which is the same as I think the G1 Transformers show, right? I haven't seen really a whole lot of G1 Transformers other than, like, the animated movie.
Right. I've been watching... I watched it all pretty recently, and, yeah, it seems like this is a pretty good approximation of what that's like. I mean, the movie is the best part of it, for sure. But, yeah, Bumblebee is probably, like, appears in the most episodes out of any robot in there, because Optimus gets killed off in the movie. But then I think Bumblebee keeps appearing in season 3. So he's probably, okay. You know, one of the biggest characters in Transformers. Like the recent Robots in Disguise cartoon, Optimus only appears in a few episodes of that, and Bumblebee's the leader of the team. So he's he's like one of the mascots. You know, he's always hanging out with the kids in the G1, like going to them to the arcade and that sort of thing. Because he's like the size of a human more so he can like go around with them. More than the others who are like giants and would, I guess, just like step on everyone.
Yeah. I know with this one, I think they officially killed off the Never Gonna Give You Up meme. Because,
oh,
like,
really?
There was a scene where they were like, she was sticking a music into Bumblebee to listen to. And she stuck in the Rick Astley song. And it lasted 2 minutes before he just like voluntarily like ejected that cassette tape across the garage. And like the whole, like, it was a funny scene. So like we all laughed at it. And I was
they
like,
played the Rickroll song? Or?
Yes, they, yeah, the movie was, they, Bumblebee stopped that movie from being Rickrolled.
Okay.
It played for 2 seconds and he like puked it out of his cassette jack. He's like, you know, kind of like, oh hell no, don't play that in there. So.
That meme has lasted longer than anyone could have expected.
Yeah, it's the fact that you know you've made it with a meme if you have Rick Astley show up at the Macy's Day Parade. Like 25 years past his prime and when he made that song. And yeah, and he's only known for like 2 songs, and that's the one that like the internet made him popular for, is one of those. And
that's gonna be
I didn't even think he was still alive. I don't think anyone knew. Yeah, he's still alive now. I was just like, wow, he's still living. I guess someone got a hold of him somewhere, or whatever hole he's living in. They're like, come to the Macy's Day Parade. We want to hear you sing. Or watch you lip sync your song.
He's like only famous at this point because of the fact that his song became a meme.
Yeah, that's, I mean, who would have thought? So, I will say this, like, so at the end of the movie, I'm not trying to spoil anything, but like the Autobots do come to Earth and they have, like, it kind of ends with Bumblebee. He transforms into a Camaro, like a 70 version Camaro. And he's riding along the Golden Gate Bridge with Optimus, because Optimus is a Mack truck with a big trailer behind him. And I was just like, that is awesome to see. So, like, you know, you realize it was Optimus Prime. And I just enjoy the designs for this so much. They did a good job, like, recapturing that G1 Transformers look for sure.
So and Optimus is only in it, like, at one scene or something?
He's in it in the very beginning during the Cybertron War, and then he's in it, like, the very end. But there's, like, a hologram of him with his message to Bumblebee to set up a base on Earth. That's pretty much it. But it's, no, overall, it's a very good movie. Like, my family and I, we enjoyed it. Cause we thought it was going to be another Bayformers movie. And then after seeing it, it was like, okay, it's just, like, I knew it was going to be good because they went back with G1 Transformer look or designs. And I was like, okay, I have really high hopes for this film. And cause I knew nothing about it. I went there with, like, no expectations. Cause I didn't know what to expect. And
yeah.
It was a whole lot better than anything Michael Bay has done. So,
I expect to probably be like a James Rolfe review of this before too long.
Yeah, I imagine.
Like the Bayformers.
I think James Rolfe is going to give, like, this movie high praise.
I would expect.
So it looks like they're going to continue this, like, with other movies. So I really hope there's, like, an Optimus Prime movie. And if they make, I know they're going to have to make toys for this too. So, like, I would love to get, like, a G1, like, Optimus Prime, like, from this movie. Or, like, even, I would love to get a Soundwave too. Like, that would be pretty awesome. Like an action figure or whatever.
It is nice that after 10 years, they finally, or 12, or however long it's been since that first Transformers, they finally decided to make it, like, address the criticism they got, which is that it's just a mess of, like, CGI parts flying around, and you can't tell one robot from the next, and they're all ugly.
Yeah.
No, they're actually trying to make it look like the Transformers that people actually liked and grew up with.
Yeah. And I was like, why couldn't, and they should have done this. Yeah, they should have done it in the beginning. And there was a lot of people that were apologetic for that first Transformer movies, for the first one.
Yeah. But then after that, the second and third.
Fourth and fifth.
Especially the second one was, like, people really hated it because, I don't know, there's, like, some robot that humps Megan Fox's leg or something, and people were like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, after then, Megan Fox never went back to work with anything with Michael Bay, so.
Yeah, she, like, said, like, oh, Michael Bay's Hitler, and he made me, like, this is, like, proto Me Too or something. She was like, he made me go to his house and, like, put on a swimsuit and, like, wash his car in order to get the job or something like that. This was, like, a pre-Harvey Weinstein scandal or something.
Yeah.
But, like, at the time, it was sort of regarded as, like, this sort of, like, weird, humorous Hollywood gossip. And it wasn't considered to be, like, groundbreakingly evil, like some of the stuff that came later.
Yeah.
Like, this Kevin Spacey stuff that's going on now is much worse. But still, the Michael Bay thing is, like, almost, like, hilarious in retrospect because it's so weird. But he was, I guess, still able to get her back to work with him. Because she was April O'Neil in the Turtles movies, which he produced.
Oh. I say I haven't even seen those Turtles movies. They made the second one, which looked pretty good to the 80s show and, like, Bebop and Razor or whatever.
Yes, Bebop and Rocksteady.
Rocksteady.
Yeah.
Didn't Josh see that and said it was really good?
Yeah, it was. James Roth, I think, liked that one too, because he was always saying in his reviews of the old ones, like, why'd they put Toka and Razor in there instead of Bebop and Rocksteady in Turtles 2, the original Turtles 2?
Yeah.
And so in this one, they had the Warthog and everything, and they had the Krang, the giant brain, and the Technodrome, and all this stuff that he had always said, like, they should put in there, because it's, like, a big part of the original cartoon. So, you know, they did a pretty good job on it, and, but I mean, it's still like a big, like, CGI mess, like the Transformers and Turtles movies are, because it's yeah. Michael Bay, but. But it, I mean, as far as a Michael Bay movie goes, I guess as good as you could expect.
Yeah.
It has the guy from Arrow as, Casey Jones.
Okay.
But I guess it didn't do that well, because they, I don't think they're making a third one. I think Michael Bay is done with Turtles and Transformers. There was like a Transformers 6 announced, but it got canceled. And it, I think they're going to move it more to like Bumblebee style movies, because this one, it seems like it's going to do well and be the new future of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
There was something about like a CGI movie that has the origin of Cybertron or something might be in production.
Yeah, I go see that. I mean, like, I'm not a big Transformers fan, but like, you know, after seeing Bumblebee, I was just like, I could watch more of this stuff.
Yeah. I've always been fond of the traditional animated parts of Transformers more than the CGI. I know Armada has a lot of animation flaws, you know, mm-hmm. unfinished mouth movements and that sort of thing. And this script is like really cringy with the fat kid that's always like talking about food that's hanging around, and he's like useless. But there's some charm to the traditionally animated robots, the really bright, colorful designs that they have, yeah. and the transformation sequences and stuff that you just don't get with the sort of crude CGI of Energon and the Bay movies and everything. They just look too fake and weird. So, I mean, if they can make it CGI, which I'm sure that this new movie is, but make it also look like an old cartoon, I feel like that's, like, kind of the best you can do with a modern live-action movie. So, I'm yeah. looking forward to seeing it.
No, I think, yeah, you'll enjoy Bumblebee for sure. So, yeah, that's all. I will say this, like, John Cena's in this, and
okay.
actually, he's not. I think he plays, like, a jarhead or whatever. If he sticks to doing roles as him being a military guy, he does it very well. Like, I think his acting is only limited, kind of like... I mean, The Rock's actually become a pretty good actor, and I think John Cena's on his way to be that. But, like, my brother was, like, saying, like, yeah, he did a whole lot better in this movie than, like, the Marine movies he did, which I heard were, like, I heard those were bad.
I think he is in, like, Scooby-Doo wrestling movies and stuff like that. Also.
Yeah. Well, there was a there was kind of a thing where I looked at Lynn with my brother, and we did the John Cena theme. We're like, he's like, you know, Bumblebee crashes on the planet, and then his first thing, I think one of his things out of his mouth is like, "Did you guys see that?" And all I could think of was, or I think he ran off. He's like, "You guys can't see that." And all I could think of was like, because it's like, "You can't see me" thing or whatever that John Cena does. And I just, my brother and I were kind of thinking the same thing at the, we heard that line.
You think that was like an intentional throw?
Probably. I don't know, but I caught up on it really quick. Oh man. No, like I think he did pretty well as like a, he was sort of the antagonist, and then became like a supporting role like in the end. So. But with John Cena, like, I thought he did very well in this movie.
What is, like, the military has to go after the robots because they think they're a menace or something?
Yeah, they pulled that off on this one, too.
Okay.
I'm not to explain too much of the plot or whatever. I mean, it's not like it's hard to follow or whatever, just, you know, for people who haven't seen it yet.
One of the weird things about the original Transformers show is, like, the robots are not really in disguise, even though it's called Robots in Disguise. Like, everybody knows that they're there, and, like, everybody knows that Autobots are good and that the Decepticons are bad. It's really only the later ones where they add that.
I remember, yeah, there was a line of this where there's a scientist that wants to, like, give their technology, like, current technology to the Decepticons that come. Because the Decepticons are like, "We're Decepticon peacemakers, and there's an evil robot here on this planet we have to check after. We need your technology." And then they're discussing it over in the boardroom, and the scientist is like, "Well, this is the most advanced thing we could have, and if we don't use them, then what happens if we just let them go? They're going to go to the Russians, right? We don't want them to go to the Russians because they're still in the Cold War." Uh-huh. And John Cena's role said, "Does they have the name Decepticon. Like, that ought to tell you that this is not a good thing to do. We can't trust them because of Decepticon, deceptive, hello? Do you guys not know the English language? It was kind of a line you put in there. Yeah, it was funny. But then when they threw out that, like, we don't want to, like, what if they go to the Russians? We can't afford that. And, like, we should have them on our side and let them use our technology. And so, yeah, it was, yeah, because that kind of ties into, like, you know, like, everyone thinking the Autobots are automatically good or whatever. So, like, in this, like, they don't know, like, really who's good or who's evil. They came from outer space and we can't trust any of them kind of attitude at first. So,
the Autobot is not as obviously good as Decepticon is obviously evil.
Yeah, that...
Like, there's nothing auto. Like, what is that supposed to mean? It's not, like, Deceptive is obviously bad, but auto just means, like, self or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. You gotta have that, like, uncommon sense, like, kind of acting in this for a movie where it's, like, people do stupid things to do stupid things to move the plot along. So
yeah, I think in the Japanese version they call them Destrons instead of Decepticons, like Destrons. Destroy.
Oh,
destroy
I get it.
Robots or something. Yeah,
yeah.
I think the Autobots are just called Cybertrons. But yeah, they have like slightly different names in there. But I'm not sure. Like some of the robots have different names and some have the same. Like, sometimes Megatron is called Galvatron in the Japanese version when he's not in the English version of, like, Energon, I think. But in these new movies, it's probably based on the US version. I doubt they, like, change it too much for the Japanese version. Because, the original shows were more, like, co-productions, but I think these movies are pretty much all Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of all I got to say on Bumblebee. Definitely go check it out. Do you have anything else for... it's the day after Christmas. What did you get for Christmas? And I can talk about what I got for Christmas.
Okay, yeah, we did a Voltes 5 for our Christmas special, but this will be like our post-Christmas special.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some Switch games. I've been trying out the new Pokemon, which is very much simplified from, like, Red, but, you know, with modern graphics, obviously.
Yeah.
So basically you have, like, a Pokeball that you throw at any wild Pokemon you run into, and you just, you can get berries first in order to try to, you know, weaken it, I guess. And then you throw the Pokeball, you don't even battle it. So it's like basically the same as the phone game, Pokemon Go.
Okay.
So you don't have to, you know, use Thunder Shock or whatever to weaken the Pokemon. Catch it like you would in the previous main series games. I guess that's them trying to simplify the game or something for younger audiences.
That sounds like what I call neutering.
Yeah. And then I went to the gym later and battled Brock this morning, and he's got this guy at the front door who says, Brock is only accepting challengers who have Pokemon that are stronger than his, or something like that. And it's like, so you have to have like a water type or a grass type, or he won't battle you because he wants to lose. I don't know.
Yeah, what kind of gym leader wants to lose? Like, I don't, like, I can understand a worthy challenger, but like, he's asking for someone to beat him. Like, that's like, yeah, going to a karate gym. It's like, if you're going to come in, you better make sure to, like, wipe us completely out with your non-kung fu. Or you have to go out and get better kung fu before you come in here and beat us up. And then you can join our gym. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I get that, like, the original Brock battle is kind of tough in the Red, Blue, and Yellow games. Mm-hmm. Especially Yellow, because, I mean, this is basically a remake of Yellow. Pikachu and everything.
Gotcha.
You know, the electric attacks are not going to be very effective on rock type. And so, you know, it's hard, but, you know, I guess you have to catch a Nidoran or, they have Oddish now in the forest, which was not there before.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's not that hard to get it. And every time you catch a Pokemon, you get a ton of experience points with all your Pokemon. Mm-hmm. So, you get like a level up every time you catch a Pidgey or something. And so it's really simple and easy. But I guess it does have like a nice, you know, like orchestral remakes of the original theme songs that went with each location. And, it's interesting to see, you know, what was originally this little simple, like black and white 8-bit game that transformed into, you know, this big budget, modern type of thing. And, you know, more immersive than playing it on a Game Boy, certainly. But,
yeah.
In general, it has the same kind of problems I've mentioned with Odyssey and other games on Switch, where it's just, they've really, I don't know, they're trying to make it appeal to everyone or thing, and so they make it as dumbed down as possible so that nobody's gonna get frustrated and stop playing it, I guess is the idea. Or they'll get bored with it if they can't make any progress and start playing another game.
I would think you get bored of it if you make too much progress or if it's too easy. Like, that's kind of the problems I have with, I don't know, it's...
Yeah.
You gotta have it, you have to have it challenging in some aspect. At least with Pokemon, like, I feel like it was a balance. Then again, with Pokemon, like, there was tough, way tougher games out there than what Pokemon was.
Right. Yeah, like, but, like, Mount Moon is tough to get through in the original, so many levels. You pretty much have to go back to the Pokemon Center and heal if you don't have enough potions or revives. I haven't gotten to Mount Moon yet, but that's the next thing I'm going to do now that I've beaten Pewter City Gems. So, and I'm sure it'll be shortened.
I feel like you're just going to come up to the Mount Moon entrance and someone's just going to hand you what you're going to go in there to get anyways. It's like, just don't even bother coming in and you got what you need. You can come back and you can explore if you want to, but since you got what you want, there's really no point. So you can go on your journey. We just saved you 2 hours.
Oh, that reminds me. There is a point that's like that already. You go to a city and you know how there's the guy at the Pokemon Mart, like a package, and he's like, take this back to Professor Oak. And then you take it to Oak, and Oak's like, oh, thanks, and here's your Pokedex, and blah, 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 here's Pokeballs. In this game, you go up to there, and he's like, hey, here's your package. And then the game asks, do you want to go straight back to Professor Oak's lab? And you can just say yes, and it just takes you directly there. And you don't even have to, like, walk down the three ledges that you can jump to go right back to Pallet Town.
Oh, my God.
So, like, that's how much it, like, holds your hand. It's like, we've got to save you.
I can imagine, like, if someone made a webcomic. This is my idea for a webcomic on like a political satire on this. It's like you have like this fit, healthy kid starting his Pokemon journey, and it's like you complete the game, and at the end it's just some like fat 300-pound slob that like is in a wheelchair and is crippled because he didn't have to work for anything. And then it's just him going, "Yeah, I'm a Pokemon master," and it's like through his fat autistic lips. Like that's just how like I think of like these games now. Uh-huh. I'll just go ahead and make that webcomic right now, and it'll get on Reddit, and it'll be popular. So, heard it here first, folks.
I guess one other thing for closing remarks is I don't know if we mentioned that Ghost has rage quit the internet again.
No, we didn't mention it last time. But like, what's really there to say? He's just, I mean, who knows if and when he'll come back? So.
Well, there's some guy who he, like, doxxed. He made some comment, something like, all autistic people should be put to sleep or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then this guy got mad at him, and there was some controversy where after the midterms, Ghost was blaming millennials and Gen Z for the Republicans losing seats in the House and saying, like, you people deserve to be replaced by immigrants. And then his audience got mad at him. And they were like, WTF, Ghost loves open borders now. And so they were going after Ghost. And then they started, you know, like, tearing into each other. And Ghost started doxing people. And he got banned from Gab twice, mm-hmm. which you really had to be pretty bad to be banned from Gab.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already banned from Twitter, too, on multiple occasions. So, and then he put out some 7-minute video blaming the inappreciative fans and saying, I'm leaving the internet for good and screw all you people.
Well, so what contributed to that as he took off Radio Graffiti. People only yes. listened to his show to get on Radio Graffiti. And that was the best part of his show was Radio Graffiti. So he decided to do it his own way, which I don't blame him, but at the same time, it hurt his numbers. And like even after the new format, like I think there was some sort of statistic or graph or something showing like the gradual decline of his viewership and his income once he got rid of Radio Graffiti or whatever and did things the way he wanted to and realized that he didn't. I think it was, like the caption was like the high cost of doing what you wanted to do. Or, yeah, or, like, fighting the fight of doing, yeah, whatever it was. And so now he's, like, you know, and he blames everyone else for his mistake. I understand, like, why he got rid of Radio Graffiti, because he was trying to make it into a serious show. But
nobody takes him seriously.
No, exactly. That's why they did Radio, that's why Radio Graffiti was the greatest thing about that. Just to troll Ghost. And it really worked. And I enjoyed it. And they even tried to call in once to troll him. And, because I wanted a piece of that action. So now he's off the internet and who knows if he'll ever come back. So he may get bored and like, and I think if he comes back and brings back Radio Graffiti, then he'll get those same people calling back. And like, I mean like, can you imagine Tub Guy like still doing the same schlock 10 years from now? He probably would. And has like, he's not gay, has a family and like 4 kids. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Oh, Tub Guy, is that the truth about him?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's just a character. Like, I'm pretty sure the Ghetto Capitalist was also just a character. But he's not, like, an actual, like, welfare recipient with a crying baby. I think that was just, like, an audio clip you had to play of a baby.
Oh, yeah.
But that character didn't really show up much after the Ghost came back from the election. He was more like an early 2010s character.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes back at some point. I mean, he's left the internet before. This sort of thing happens with him.
Yeah.
But people claim to have found like his docs, and there was like a thread on 8chan or 4chan or something where they were saying like, oh, Ghost is this guy Jason De Leon who owns a antique shop in San Antonio. And they're trying to prove it by like ordering pizzas and claiming they heard Templeton barking when they did it and that sort of thing. So maybe it's true that what they found out about him, and maybe that is why he left the internet. But I mean, that's like supposedly that's a doc that's come up. People have come across it like multiple times over the years. Yeah. So I think if it keeps coming up, there must be something there, and it's probably true. But people were like, "Oh, Ghost, he's like a secret Hispanic, and he's just pretending to be against immigration, and now he's revealed himself as an open borders Mexican." Or something, and I guess it's not that surprising. I mean, he does live in Texas.
Yeah, who knows? I didn't explain what I got for Christmas. I got at NC State one of those really nice umbrellas. I got some new bed sheets, but the big thing that I got a couple of this stuff, but the big thing I got was. I have an 8 terabyte external hard drive that since yesterday morning at 10 a.m. has been transferring everything off my 4 terabyte.
It's still doing that?
Yes. I'm at 64% complete.
Okay.
Once I end this recording, the transfer rate will be quicker. And I think it'll have like maybe 18 more hours left of work to do. So.
Well, yeah. I guess with the 8 terabytes, you'll have maybe room for the Scratch Network Reborn project when it's done.
I'm not putting. I don't want to put any of that on there. So, like this, the 8 terabyte is like for me and getting stuff off my screen and having like another work external hard drive, something a whole lot larger. So then I don't have to like plow through like a bunch of data in a short amount of time. So, yeah, I'm content. I'll be content with this 8 terabyte for however long until I need another one. So, yeah, that's kind of my
big... I also got the Smash, which seems to be more like the other Smash games. I don't see any element of it that's really been, like, mm-hmm. super dumped down like some of the other Nintendo games that have come out recently, so at least I'll give them credit for that.
Okay.
I did notice that the trophies are not there, which were in the earlier games, which you would, like, collect them, and there was, like, in this Melee, there was, like, you would collect coins or something, and then there was some sort of machine, and you would put them in there, and it would give you, like, a random trophy. where you get trophies for like completing adventure mode or classic mode to with each character.
Right.
They seem to have changed that to something called spirits. And there's some new mode where you collect spirits and they fight with you or something. I haven't tried that out too much. I just kind of only been playing it a little bit so far, but
right.
I've already unlocked a few characters, and it seems like the music is great. I've got to the like Zelda unlocking area, and I've actually lost to a handful of people that you know, challengers that show up, and so that's at least something. You know, like I can't imagine losing a battle in Pokemon Let's Go, but at least with Smash the computer enemies are on like a reasonable level of difficulty, and they have some feature where they'll come back every now and then, and it's like challenger approaching little icon on the main menu screen for when the challenger will come up and you can fight them again.
Yeah,
as a rematch to try to unlock them. So at least I'll give them credit on that one, that it's still on a sort of reasonable level of difficulty, and the graphics and music and everything are fine, and there are just like a ton of characters that they've announced for that. That probably is going to have, you know, 60 characters or something, or maybe more. I don't know. Maybe more have already been announced, because they had like every single character that's ever been in one of the previous Smash Brothers games was the first announced, and then they kept announcing more and more, and there were weird things like characters from Persona and the Chain Chomp and the Piranha Plant and all these like weird Mario enemies, King K. Rool, and all these different the dinosaur from Metroid, Ridley. So it'll be interesting, like getting all these different new characters in there and everything.
Yeah,
so, and I'll give them credit for that, but it is very much like DLC heavy. So I had to buy this, pass to get all the new characters as they come out and everything. I didn't do that with a 3DS one, and it kind of got old because you have the new characters and then when they would come out and stuff. So maybe this one will keep my interest more than that one did with the updating roster and everything.
Okay.
All right. Well, we've been on here pretty long.
Yeah, I got to help my mom take down Christmas stuff. So that's been my job today. So I can get out of this computer chair. Thank you, listeners, for listening to my personal ramblings on Soul Bianca and how much I love it and our review of that. Thank you for listening. See you next time on whatever else we might be talking about. I don't know. Hope you guys had a good Christmas. So, peace out. I'm out. Now become Anime of Yesteryear's detective short. In the case of Evangelion release dates. I'm going to add some smooth jazz into this. Have some sort of, like, I don't know, corny dialogue about how, like, you know, it was the day after Christmas. Dustin and John were recording about Soul Bianca. Those women were hot. Just like our big break on finding the correct release dates for Evangelion tapes. John was the one that brought it up. He's the real stiff. Dustin just wanted to get on with this darn review of Soul Bianca because it was way more important. But that's just not how it works in the high life case of detective work for the anime of yesteryear. Man, where the heck could I can actually go with something with this. So we're gonna get into the chronicles and solving the case of the Evangelion release of VHS tapes pretty soon. I'm not good at this narrating stuff. I can narrate if I had a script in front of me instead of just like mumbling things off the top of my head, which sometimes I can sort of be good at, but I'm not. But I don't know what else to say on this recording. I'm just really just killing time until John gets back from using the bathroom and getting the cold case files of Evangelion tapes that he owns and doing some comparison analysis NCIS shit. Because that is how we roll on here. We make sure we give you the facts correctly and close this case shut. The jazz music is probably just going to keep playing until John gets back. He has taken a long-ass piss. John's Crohn's disease was flaring up like a mad woman during a period. I don't want to describe his pissing moment right now. Oh my gosh, this is going to be in the recording and I just do not care. Oh man. I'm actually going to take the time to edit out and make this coherent with the smooth jazz music that I'm wanting to add in this recording about John taking a piss and getting his Evangelion VHS tape. He might be taking a dump, I don't know. Maybe John was taking a real hardcore stinker in the toilet. Enough to clock it up all the way to the canal of George H.W. Bush's grave. I don't know where I'm going with this. I think I'm going to need to get back. So I'm not talking to myself and being an idiot. John has always been a real gumshoe for this kind of work. Dustin as well. But Dustin would rather talk about Soul Bianca, because that is way more important than Evangelion tapes. Why in the world did we ever get on this stupid tangent in the first place? I didn't even want to talk about Evangelion. It's always like, it can never be simple with me and John. We have to go on like 30-minute rants when something gets really good. And that's just all we do. Because that's how this show is built on, that pillar of unstableness of a review and just going off on tangents. I swear, all of this is going to make... This is like my... Oh my gosh, this is my freaking exegesis of Shinji Ikari's mental state of that last episode of Evangelion where he just has inner monologue with himself, questioning everything, and I even questioning the morality of staying on topic for a podcast episode and me rambling about it. And I don't know, just going through it, just going through the motions. And I'm talking to myself because this has no relevance to anything in this episode. This is all going to stay. I know it's going to stay. Like, I already made the decision before I ever convert this to audio and then take it to Audacity. Probably Evangelion music is playing by now. Oh, jeez. This is just such a wreck. Where's John? Oh, man. This is dead air. Yep. And me rambling. Yep. Let's take a smoke break. A vape break, actually.